Part 2, The Movies Come to Hollywood. For years, people believed there was a hollyroot bush growing in the Santa Monica Mountains, and that was where the name Hollywood came from. Not only is that species of plant not found in Los Angeles, there's no such thing as a hollyroot. In 1887, Midwestern real estate speculators Harold and Dieta Wilcox subdivided 700 acres of fruit orchards at the base of the Santa Monica Mountains. The Wilcoxes looked for a catchy name to appeal to conservative home buyers from the East Coast. They called the area Prospect. That summer, a homesick Mrs. Wilcox went to Illinois for the season. Returning to California on the train from Chicago, she met a woman and they discussed summer homes. Mrs. Wilcox, I have the loveliest summer home just outside of Chicago. Oh, really? What is the name of your summer home? Hollywood. Dieta Wilcox was enchanted. When she arrived in California, she told her husband she had a better name for the town than Prospect. Harold Wilcox agreed, and that's how Hollywood got its name. Hollywood began as a dusty, conservative community where farmers toiled by unpaved roads. Mrs. Wilcox was a strict prohibitionist and had little tolerance for the wrong type of element. When showbiz people appeared on the scene in 1911, they were greeted with signs in front of hotels and apartments that said, "No dogs or actors allowed." The birth of the moving picture took place in California. Governor Leland Stanford, the founder of Stanford University, bet $25,000 that all four of his horse's hooves left the ground at the same time when the animal trotted. Stanford asked a photographer named Edward Muybridge to take a series of consecutive pictures using 12 different cameras detailing the horse's motion. Not only did Stanford win his wager, the photographs inspired the invention of the motion picture camera in Thomas Edison's Astoria Laboratory in 1890. It was East Coast cities like New York, Pittsburgh, and Boston where early movies were made and distributed. Besides weather problems, the filmmakers had trouble dealing with Thomas Edison. Edison owned the patent on the motion picture camera and wanted a share on all revenues that movies made. The Edison Trust was a vast organization of men who policed eastern cities looking for outlaw filmmakers. Sometimes they would hop out from behind bushes and present directors with bills. If you didn't pay, they might break your camera. To evade Edison and the law, the filmmakers moved west. They were prepared to go as far as Mexico if Edison chased them. The early filmmakers were descendants of East European Jews. There was William Fox, who created what was to become 20th Century Fox Studios, the home of Shirley Temple. Fortunately, Fox never had to deal with Shirley Temple's father, Banker George. Once, George Temple came to the studio with a big pile of letters insisting to see producer Daryl Zanuck. "I demand that you do something about my fan mail," raved George. "It's okay for Shirley to get fan mail, but not me." Zanuck asked to see the letters, and after reading a few, laughed in Temple's face. The embarrassed banker left 20th Century Fox in a hurry. What were the letters? They were requests from women across America who wanted Mr. Temple to father their children. Another filmmaker from New York was chicken farmer Carl Laemmle, the founder of Universal Studios. Known as Uncle Carl because of his habit of hiring every relative, he discovered a 44-year-old actor named Boris Karloff in the Universal Studios cafeteria and hired him to play Frankenstein's monster in James Whale's 1931 classic. As soon as Karloff was in costume and makeup, he left the studio and headed straight for Groucho Marx's house. Groucho was upstairs in the bedroom when he heard his maid scream and plop to the floor in a faint. The great comedian hid under the bed as every footfall slowly clambered up the stairs.
"I just came over to say hello, Groucho," said Karloff.
For once, Marx had no ready reply. He remained under the bed until the creature left. Then there was Cecil B. DeMille, Jesse Lasky, and Samuel Goldwyn, who left the East Coast for Flagstaff, Arizona in 1911 to film a western called The Squaw Man. An unseasonal rain pushed them further west to Hollywood. If not for that rainstorm, this whole tape might be about Flagstaff. The conservative folk of Hollywood were not the first to think that show business people were a bad influence and immoral. Europeans felt the same way. Later, when actors achieved stardom, Europeans still marveled at their status. When Ronald Reagan became president in 1980, British actor Michael Caine, actually Maurice Micklewhite, who borrowed his surname from the movie The Caine Mutiny, starring Humphrey Bogart, stated, "In England, they wouldn't elect an actor as Ratcatcher." The independent city of Hollywood would have kept actors out if only it had enough water. In 1907, Welsh engineer William Mulholland held the unenviable position of head of the Department of Water and Power in the city of Los Angeles, a desert city that had only enough water for 200,000 people. Mulholland's search for water brought him 250 miles northeast of Los Angeles to the Owens Valley River. The river, supplied by snow caps from the Sierra Nevada mountains, had enough water for a population of 2 million. Living by this river was a group of farmers who made inefficient use of their resource. The fast-talking Mulholland convinced the farmers to sell him the water rights in exchange for an irrigation system that the engineer would construct, a promise he had no intention of keeping. He built a pipeline to Los Angeles instead, a 250-mile wonder that was compared to the Great Wall of China. When the farmers found out they were snookered, they tried to kill Mulholland. They missed. Then they tried to blow up the pipeline. No luck. Finally, they took him to court. Strike three. The contracts were legal. L.A. attained its water. For this bit of chicanery, Mulholland had a lovely 50-mile winding street named after him. To get its fair share of this water supply, Hollywood had to give up its cityhood, which meant giving up their say on who could live and work there. And so the movies came to Hollywood. In 1903, Edwin Porter's The Great Train Robbery launched a series of westerns. Previously, movies had been without any stories, such as a cow eating hay or two girls having a pillow fight. The hero versus villain plots had an immediate effect on audiences. Once, during the silent film days, a man stood up from the movie audience, pulled out a revolver, and opened fire on the screen. When the police came to arrest him, he explained that he couldn't allow those varmints on the screen to pick on that poor innocent woman any longer. Disgruntled cowboys, out of work because of smaller ranches and automation eliminating their jobs, went to the movies and thought they could imitate the antics they saw on the silver screen. Migrating to Hollywood to look for work, they would seek out cowboy stars such as Tom Mix and William Hart, hoping to show them up as big screen phonies who couldn't shoot, ride, or rope. Tom Mix was challenged throughout his career to shooting contests by scoffing cowpokes who thought him a tenderfoot. They would be embarrassed when Mix hit all the targets. The filming in the Hollywood Hills frightened longtime residents into thinking that warlike Indians had returned to the area. People were afraid to leave their homes at night as drunken cowboys, many of them failing to find work even as extras, rode through the dusty streets, shooting haphazardly at windows and lampposts. Those who had opposed the movie business either became involved in it or fled the neighborhood.